Okay, we're continuing our discussion on the Mittler Rebbe. I talked to you a lot about his Nesiyus, and I'll continue. There's other things that have to do with his Nesiyus, and if the time will allow, we'll actually talk a little bit about the arrest and the liberation of the Histalkus. One of the big inyanim in which the Mittler Rebbe was involved was Yiddish Panosa. That the Yidden should make Pashto Panosa. And it's very interesting because you're not allowed to say about a Rebbe such a thing, but the Mittler Rebbe himself was not in this world. You know, the word I don't want to use is Batlin. He was not on this planet. To such a degree that the Mittler Rebbe did not understand the value of money. Here was a man who was a genius of geniuses, an incredible mind. The Friedrich Rebbe said about the Mittler Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe's moich and ver kendos. The genius of the Mittler Rebbe is indescribable. The Friedrich Rebbe was a pretty smart man himself, you know. The Roger Chava used to say, the expression, the way I heard it from my mashpiyim was, the Welt zogt, as Elinke is given der Gaon. People say the Elinke, that means the Vilna Gaon was the genius. The genius was the Alter Rebbe. And the Mittler Rebbe was Ga'an HaGoinim, was the genius of geniuses. So someone said to the Roger Chofer, how do you know about the Mittler Rebbe's mind? He didn't write any Nigla. Mittler Rebbe wrote a lot of Nigla. But it was destroyed in a fire. On the day he passed away, there was a fire in Lubavitch. It destroyed his desk, which had a lot of his writings on it, and his box of Niglas for him. Chassidus. He says, because he read his Chassidus, the Imre Bino. And the Roger Chofer said these words. So schreiben die Svorot, was das einen Doin, Imre Bino, to write the theories and the sefer Imre Bina, you need to have veins in your brain, the thickness of a finger. This is his hagdara. In other words, the genius of the Mittler Rebbe, the strength of his mind, as the Roger Chover, who was all brain, was so strong. He says he's smarter than his father, greater than Alter Rebbe intellectually, which is incredible. But he was completely not in this world. I mean, there's many stories. The Mittler Rebbe's hafshata was unreal. You know, the story that everybody knows is the story with the little child. But the Mittler Rebbe was sitting and learning, and his son fell out of a crib, under his nose, and was crying hysterically, and the Rebbe didn't hear. The Alter Rebbe was living upstairs, and he came down, and he wrapped the child in, and he cradled the child, put the child back in its bassinet, and rocked the child back to sleep. And after he had finished with the child, he woke his son up from his concentration and he said to him, this is not good. He said, what's not good? He said, your son just fell out of his crib and you didn't respond. And he told him that as much as you can be immersed in the higher worlds, you have to hear the crying of a little child. In Tov Shen Chof, in 1960, the Rebbe printed a letter which was printed in many, many Sfarim. It was like a big hit. And the name of it was Kel Nar Beiche, the child, the sound of the crying child. This is the teichin of the letter. Okay. So everybody knows that story about the Mittler Rebbe being bashed in a different world. And it had many practical manifestations in his life. He was... And one of them was that it's incredible to think a human being who was as intelligent as he was did not appreciate the value of money. Somehow money was beneath him. You know, like other mechava before the chet, there were certain things that were beneath them. Money was beneath him. This is a true story. So he once had a stack of money on his desk, of rubles, notes. It was a lot of money. And somebody said in a joke that they're forgeries. So he took the money, threw it into the fire. Someone tells you this money is counterfeit. What do? You look at each one, you take with a light to see the strip. To him, it was paper. When the Tzemach Tzedek became a Rebbe, the servants in the house used to complain that the Tzemach Tzedek is not a real Rebbe, he's a fake Rebbe. What was that ayah? The Mittler Rebbe never asked for change. You asked him for money, he gave you money. A 1 ruble note, a 10 ruble note, a 100 ruble note, whatever you had, he gave you. And the Technisch Fernandiger Klibben, how a man could be such a genius and yet something so rudimentary, so simple, should just go past him it's hard to understand, but he was pushed on a different level. He was just not here, completely not here, more than any other Rebbe. And at the same time, his investment in Panosa of his Chassidim is greater than that of any Rebbe. As I told you before, after the war with Napoleon, where the French in their retreat destroyed White Russia completely, and the Hasidim were left destitute, without homes, without businesses, without promise, without possibility. So the Rebbe appealed to the Russian government, to the Tsarist government, that they should give him land where he would be permitted to settle his Hasidim, where they could subsistence, live on the land. In other words, not make profit, but push it, sustain themselves. Now the government of Russia was indebted to the Mittler Rebbe, because they knew how much the Alter Rebbe had supported them. They were a religious lot, although they were very, very anti-Semitic. They were religious, and they knew that the Alter Rebbe had prayed for them, and they won the war, which they should not have won, B'derech HaTeva. I mean, the French should have won the war. And as you know, the Russians have two weapons, a lot of bodies to take bullets, and then the winter. So the Russians sent people to the front to get killed en masse, and then they wait for the winter, and then they win the war. Aren't we great? What a way to fight wars. That's how they defeated the Germans also. They just let them die. We got more bodies, catch some bullets, the winter has set in, now we won. That's how they defeated the French. But of course, the Alter Rebbe was involved, and they knew that the Alter Rebbe davened on their behalf, and they believed that his koyach ha-tefillah had power. But the Alter Rebbe did a lot more than pray. The Alter Rebbe spied. The Alter Rebbe had Hasidim who actually spied for the Russians against the French. And there was a debt of gratitude. The Mittler Rebbe was given a notice, a citation, honoring him as a special citizen and so forth. So Alexander was apparently a reasonable king. The Mittler Rebbe's decease was under the reign of Alexander. He became king in 1801. And he was the one who freed the Alter Rebbe the second time from prison and from the capital. Alexander was succeeded by Nicholas, Yamach Shemei V'Zechrei. And Nicholas was a very smart man, but he was a ruthless and a cruel man. He made the Gezeira of the Cantonisten, and he was the one who kept on taking away land from the Jews and forcing them deeper and deeper into the interior of Russia, where life was virtually unlivable. But the Mittler Rebbe, when he became a Rebbe, Alexander was still alive. And he was pretty good to the Jews, and he agreed to the Mittler Rebbe's request. Mittler Rebbe asked him for land, for settling, for relocating Hasidim, and he gave him a huge plot of land in the Kherson region, which is in the Ukraine, which was called then the breadbasket of the world. It remained that way until Stalin fixed it. And he resettled 2,000 mishpachas of Hasidim on this land. Now imagine a Rebbe who's so in Atzilus that he doesn't understand the value of a dollar bill, but he understood what it means to eat. I think it's quite interesting. And it goes back really to the roots of Hasidus. The Baal Shem Tov's first mission, the first campaign of the Baal Shem Tov was to provide Yidden with Parnassah. In the belief, you can't expect people to be religious if they're hungry and cold and afraid. You have to feed people. Baal Shem Tov's first campaign as a Hasidish Rebbe was Parnassah, was Gashmias. And the Mittler Rebbe did the same thing. And the Hasidim complained. He didn't want it. And there are two reasons. Number one, they're going to be very far away from the Lubavitch. They're not going to be able to go to the Rebbe. And number two, whoever heard of Hasidim farmers? It's undignified. So there's a letter which is published in Igdus Kedush and Mittler Rebbe. As far as the first complaint, the Mittler Rebbe says, I will travel to you. And he committed himself to make an annual journey. Every year he would go for the summer to the Ukraine, and he would travel from city to city, so the Chassidim living on these farms should not lose out beruchnius for following the Rebbe's instructions to move to feed their families, for heaven's sakes. But unfortunately, the Mittler Rebbe did this only one time, in Pei Beis. That would be 1822. Then the Rebbe fell ill, and he never recovered, and he was no longer in a position to travel. So he called him Reb Hillel Paracher, and he gave him the mission to travel as his emissary, on his behalf. And he gave him the famous words, Schneiden Gashmias und Zeyen Ruchnias, to harvest Gashmias, material finances, money, panosa, and to plant seeds of Ruchnius. The Mittal Rebbe used to collect a lot of money. They people in the Chersona region had leftovers. They had enough money to actually give tzedakah and to support the causes of the Rebbeim till the war. They lived in those kolchos, lived in those farms for 130 years, anerach, 120 years. At the end, of course, under the communists, it became very hard because Stalin wanted to centralize everything and so forth. But they lived in a very, very pure, holy world, and there was Parnasa, and there was Kol Tov. And Abhil Paracha traveled to the Rebbe, to Kherson, every summer for over 40 years, and he actually passed away there. He passed away 2 days after Tisha B'Av in Tafresh Chavdalet, 1864. V'shamenu chasei kovet, he's actually buried in Kherson, and they built the oil on top of his remains, because this was his mission. He represented the Rebbe in Kherson for almost half a century. Now, Kherson has a special connection to us, to Chassidim of our generation, because the Rebbe was born there. The Rebbe was born in the city of Nikolaev. Nikolaev was the big city in that region. Nikolaev was amongst those farms, amongst those colonies, but Nikolaev was actually a city. I don't know how big it was, but it wasn't a farm. But people would come to town. Nikolaev was sort of speaking like a center. People would gather there. It was a meeting place. And the Rabbeim used to provide the Cherson Yidden with Rabbonim and Mashpiim and Shoichtim and Malamdim. It was a uniquely Chabad Hasidisha world. And a lot of very important people were born there. The Rebbe was born there. The Bitcher de Masmid was born there. It was a very, very rich and successful planting of not just Gashmid, but Ruchnis of Hasidus. Now, as far as the second complaint, that whoever heard of Chassidim farmers, the Mittal Rebbe lambasted them. As they geplatted the cup, he let them have it. Mittal Rebbe says to them, your grandparents came out of the desert after meeting God at a mountain and receiving the Torah person from the Eibishter, and they could be farmers, you could farm also. It's not so terrible. And the Mittal Rebbe loved the idea of from people living on the land. To him, this was like a model life. There's a Rishima from Chassidim that describes how the Mittal Rebbe said to his son-in-law and successor. Mittal Rebbe knew who the Tzemach Tzedek was. Herz Mendel. Herz, you hear Mendel. Steht a Yid hinter den Acker. A Jew stands behind the plow. Und der Dalet Kampfes blosen in Wind. And his tzitzis are free. And the wind is carrying them hither and thither. Unter den Gorder Himmel, under the great expanses of the sky, and between him and God there is no separation whatsoever. This is how the Mittal Rebbe envisioned that world. Close to nature and close to God. And he celebrated it. And he gave panosa, I mean, besides for everything else, 2,000 families then. It's a lot of people who were starving from hunger, Bashar. And he had to push them to go. It's an interest. They didn't want to leave. They wanted, this was, they were comfortable. They wanted to be near their Rebbe. They wanted to be near their, you know, their cemeteries, near their communities where they grew up and where their ancestry was. And they pushed them. Move, you'll have a life. 2,000 families. As I said to you before, the Tzemach Tzedek repeated that performance in a place called Tzedirin. He also got from the government a big plot of land and relocated, I don't know how many families, but hundreds of families of Hasidim, and also gave them Parnasa. There's another endeavor in which the Mittal Rebbe was involved. And as I mentioned to you before, Mittal Rebbe actually sent Chassidim to Eretz Yisrael. In the times of the Alter Rebbe, Chassidim had gone to Israel, and the Mittal Rebbe continued, sent more people to Hebron. There's a shul in Hebron that's called the Mittal Rebbe's shul, which was used by Chassidim of the Mittal Rebbe. Then of course the Tzemach Tzedek would send members of his own family. Tzemach Tzedek sent the Mittal Rebbe's own daughter, to live in Chevron, and that certainly established strong roots for Chevron. The Mittal Rebbe's daughter lived in Israel, and she lived forever. She lived well into her 80s. She passed away in the Tafresh Memchas, I think, in 1888. She was the Mittal Rebbe's daughter. The Mittal Rebbe passed away in 1827. She passed away in 1888. So she was born the day the Alter Rebbe was released from prison. That's her birthday. It was called Menucha, because Menucha means peace. She lived from Nuntes till Memchas. That's 89 years. And she was a Rebbetzin and a Balas Moifes, and people used to flock to her, Pashit. The biggest tzaddikim in Yisrael would come to her, as they say, to pay homage. The Mittal Rebbe's Tochter. And she was a real Rebbetzin. She wasn't just the wife of a Rebbe, she was a real Rebbetzin. And she had a very, very, very large family which surrounded her. Unfortunately, a lot of that family was wiped out in the pogrom of 1929 in Hebron. And the survivors moved to Yerushalayim. This is Slonim, the family Slonim, this is her grandchildren. Her husband's name was Yankov Kuli Slonim. Rabbi Yankov Kuli Slonim, Mitlebes HaTochter. And it was a very significant contribution to this Hasidus was the establishment of Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. And like I told you before, he promised to send them his Hasidus, and he would send them his originals, his own manuscripts, not copies, originals. They should get there a minute quicker, a day quicker, an hour quicker, because he was obsessed with Hasidus. One more thing I want to tell you, and then we'll talk about the arrest and liberation. This is a very interesting and powerful story. The source of this story is in a sefer called Migdal Oiz, which was published about 30 years ago, a little less than a year ago, by Rabbi Shia Munshein. And Shia Munshein, he's a librarian. He works for the library in Yerushalayim. I don't know what it's called. Sifriya Leumit. He's a very big macher in Israel. He works in the central library in Jerusalem for the government. He's a bibliographer and he's a bibliothek and he's an alagutazach and he's a brilliant man. And he found manuscripts in Israel which had never been published, and he published this book called Migdal Oiz, which is really, it's cut and paste, it's a big smorgasbord of stuff. The constant in all the stuff that's published there is that it has never been published anyplace else. It's very, very interesting. He published it l'schus of his wife's grandfather, Abdelik Slonim, who had passed away less than a decade before. And it's a very interesting sefer. There's things printed there that are printed no place else, including the maimer that the Mittal Rebbe said as he passed away. You know, the Mittal Rebbe passed away in the middle of saying Chassidus. That Chassidus is published in that sefer. It's incredible. And for some reason, the Rebbe did not print it. When the Rebbe printed the Mittal Rebbe's Chassidus, he didn't print that sefer because it's a hanocha. It's not his own writing. It's a transcript from a Chassid's rendition. Or can you imagine a Chassid wrote down? Mittal Rebbe passed away in the middle of speaking. And someone actually wrote that down. You know, the mood. He didn't write it as he talked. He wrote it after the fact. And that maimer is printed in that sefer. It's kind of incredible. It's most incredible. You see it and it's like, wow, you get goose pimples. But in that sefer, there's a reshima that relates to the following episode. I don't know if Mittal Rebbe wrote this or said this, but this is what it says. That I was sitting with Hasidim, says the Mittal Rebbe, and we were very, very, very happy. We were in a very uplifted mood. We were all rejoicing and experiencing the great joy of Chassidus. As we described before, how the Mittal Rebbe had lifted up Chassidim and Chassidus and made it, besides for everything else, beautiful and appealing and exciting and very energizing. And I was with Chassidim and we were singing and we were celebrating, and suddenly I saw my father in the middle of the Fabreng. And my father doesn't look happy at all. Looks very, very sad. And he says to me, why are you so happy? So I said to my father, why am I so happy? I am sitting with Hanash, Anchei Shleimenu, our people, our brothers, and we're rejoicing in the gift and the celebration of Chassidus. It's a Ruch Nizdika joy, it's the joy of Tzadikim. You know, like reading the Kabbalah Svarim, how the holy people, the holy mystics, when they experience joy, they would experience divine inspiration. Says the Alter Rebbe, don't you know that there's going to be a decree that they're going to take little children away from their parents for 25 years of slave labor in the Russian army? How could you rejoice? So I said to my father, I didn't know. And the Mittal Rebbe stopped the simcha, he stopped it, he canceled it. 5 years pass, 6 years pass, 7 years pass, and nothing happens. So the Mittal Rebbe assumed, that's how it's described, he explains it, that the Gezeira was abolished. So again, he's sitting with Hasidim, and there's a tremendous simcha. He's allowing himself that free expression, the overflow of the Oyra Lekiyah of Chassidus. And I see my father again, and he's not happy. And he says to me, what are you so happy about? So I said to my father, what do you mean, why am I so happy? I'm sitting with Chassidus, we're rejoicing in the joy of Chassidus. He says, but didn't I tell you? Didn't I tell you? Didn't I warn you? There was going to be a decree that they were going to take away Yiddish Kinderlach from their parents for 25 years of slave labor in the Russian army? He says, but so many years passed. I thought the decree was annulled. And the Alter Rebbe said, no, it's not annulled. So the Mittal Rebbe said a maimed. I don't know if it was on that occasion, or it was certainly in conjunction with that occasion, where he explains al pichsidus, not pikabbalah. The maimed begins with the words, lahavin inyan lekichas anche chayal bebnei Yisrael. To understand the idea of Jewish children being taken away for service in the military. This maimed is published in the Mamorim Ketes of Mittal Rebbe. It's printed now. And it was printed originally in the Middle Ages, where he explains al pichsidus. What's the point? Of course, it's a bitter maimed about golus and about tzodus and about berurim. But this is what the Mittal Rebbe knew. And when he said the maimed, nobody knew what he was talking about. Apparently, because he said the maimed while it was still in the machines in the Ruchnisdika world. He said it based on information he had from his father. And it wasn't until later when the Gezeita actually manifest on the Nicholas Yimach Shemei, the people understood in hindsight the significance of the Rebbe's maimed he said before. And the interesting thing is that when the Gezeita finally opened up, when the government established quotas at that time, and there was one reason for this decree. The excuse was the Jews are not loyal enough. And it's Jews are not loyal. They're loyal to God. I mean, let's be honest. Let's be blunt about it. Yeah? We're loyal to country, but it comes second. And in Europe, they had no mercy on us. None at all. No, they didn't suffer us at all. You know, we live in America. We take it for granted that we're left alone. It's an incredible thing. All over Europe, not just in Russia. All over Europe, Jews were not trusted on a fundamental level. It was built into the society. Don't trust a Jew. He's not loyal. He's Jewish, he's not Russian. He's Jewish, he's not German. He's Jewish, he's not French. And this is a way of forcing loyalty. Take the little children, 25 years in the army, they'd be brainwashed. They'd come home at the age of 35 years old. All they knew was king and country. They didn't know, they didn't know how to read and write. They knew how to hold a bayonet, how to kill. And there were quotas. Every city had to give so many children. And it was a miserable decree that went on for half a century and more. A miserable, miserable decree. It was such a sick, cruel abuse of a civilization. And when you hear the stories of Hasidus, put them against the backdrop of this, where everybody knows that there's a chance that their child is going to disappear into the bowels of the Russian military machine, and you understand just how difficult their lives were, and what a miracle the fact that there was any Hasidus and any Yiddishkeit under those conditions. It was very, very hard. That was on top of the financial woes and the good old traditional anti-Semitism. It was incredible, incredibly hard. And the Mittal Rebbe said, ich ken das nicht. I can't handle this. I won't be able to deal with this. So he passed away. He passed away before he needed to deal with it, and he left that job to his son-in-law, the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek. And as I've shared with you many times over the years, this exact story repeated itself again three generations later. When the Bolsheviks came into Rostov, the Rebbe Rashab, the same words, Ich ken mitzei nitzayin in einim, I cannot cohabit with them. The Rebbe Rashab was healthy, was 59 years old, passed away in a week, went from complete health, He wrote his will. It's a story that's for the ages. He wrote his will. As soon as the will was finished, he got sick. 1 week later, he passed away, and he left the Friedrich Rebbe, that miserable generation, the generation of generations. You know, where the Holocaust is one of the events of his generation. You know, the Holocaust, one of the events, maybe one of the, hasn't happened in 1,000 years. The Friedrich Rebbe dealt with Stalin and Hitler. Yimach Shemam Zechram. But the Mittal Rebbe passed away, and he left it for the Tzemach Tzedek. Now, as I explained to you, at least Bekitzer, we do have limitations of time. The Mittal Rebbe was arrested. A part of the arrest was a libel that was levied against him by his relatives, by his cousins, from his mother's side, who joined forces with the relatives of one of the Mittal Rebbe's greatest friends in Chassidim, whose name was the Pinchas Roizis. The Pinchas Roizis passed away without children. The Mittal Rebbe called him the field marshal. You know, like you have in the military, you have the plain-clothes officers, and then you have the highest rank of officers in uniform. So he called the Pinchas Reis as the field marshal. He had no children. So when he passed away, there was no succession. When his Levaya happened, the Mittler Rebbe walked his Levaya, very shattered, very depressed, very broken. And he said, the field marshal of Chassidus is gone. He was never replaced. There was never such an idea as a Chassid who sort of stood between Chassidim and the Rebbe, like the Pinchas Reis. He was very, 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 very rich. And he died childless and penniless because he gave every nickel away to tzedakah. His family, as they say, the vultures were swirling, couldn't wait for him to stop breathing. They were expecting to find millions. Man was very, very rich. He lived in a big estate, had no children. And all they found was receipts. And they were furious. They were absolutely livid. They had waited and waited. The man wouldn't die. They waited and waited and waited and waited and waited. So they came to the Mittler Rebbe and they said, our uncle left you his estate. He had no children. We're heirs. We're entitled. So the Rebbe says, but he gave it away to tzedakah. And he gave away to tzedakah during his lifetime. And he gave away to tzedakah kedas v'kedin when he was healthy. It was not his. I can't give you part of that estate. So they threatened him. They extorted him. They wanted a certain amount of the profits, of the money, whatever it was, or they would libel him. And the Mittler Rebbe told him to go fly a kite. I mean, why should he give them the money? It wasn't, he didn't give the money for the Rebbe to invest in stocks and bonds. It was tzedakah money, Bush. Maltrem Zachosid, he lived for chassidus and for tzedakah. So they extorted him. They went to the government, they libeled him. These two groups of people got together and they libeled the Mittler Rebbe based on a document which they found by the Pinchas Reis. When he died, they went into his house and they were looking for anything. There was no money. There wasn't a dime left in the estate. But they found a letter which he had written to their uncle, to the Pinchas Reis, 15 years before. Like I explained to you in the beginning of the last class, when the Rebbe first became a Rebbe, that he traveled around raising money. Remember I told you this, to reestablish the Beis Harav after the war of the French and the Russians. And he says he raised 35,000 rubles and he gave out a quarter. So they read it to mean that he raised money and that $35,000 was a quarter of the total, which meant that he raised 140,000 rubles, which was an impossible sum, and there was no accounting of that money. In that letter, it says how much money he gave each family, but it adds up to 35,000 rubles, doesn't add up to 140,000 rubles. But it was the whole sum. What the Mittler Rebbe was saying is, this is what I raised, this is how I'm distributing it, and I've already distributed, I've given out a quarter of what I need to give. And this letter, which is now, we have it now, we have the letter translated and printed in this new sefer that Beit Levin gave out. They found it in the Russian archives. The original letter became the basis for an intrusion by the state government into the Mittler Rebbe's financial affairs. And it was a very insensitive, was worse than the IRS, to put it mildly, invasion of his space and his honor. This was not a democracy, this was an autocracy. These were sick people. They hated Jews to start with. They couldn't wait for an opportunity. The greatest joy they got was to be intermediates between a war between Jews. I mean, they got to beat up on everybody. They invaded his space and they made him very uncomfortable and they tried to control him. Control his nickels and dimes. You know what I'm saying? Mamish, not to let him function as a Rebbe. And they arrested him. And they arrested the story unto itself. They didn't bring him in shackles to Petersburg, to Vitebsk. They knew they couldn't. So they, quote, invited him. So he's traveling, and every city he came to, the whole city comes out to greet him. And they give him such honor. They bring him to the Beis Medrash. He says, Chassidus, as if I bring him. And the government couldn't believe what's going on. Here's a prisoner, and he's acting like as if Hatun's Aliman and Bud. He completely disregarded them. At a certain point, they stopped him, and then they let him do it again. When he was held in Moscow, in Vitebsk, the capital of the state, he was permitted a minyan three times a day with so many and so many Jews. And three times a week, 50 Chassidim were permitted to come here, Chassidus. Three times a week as a prisoner. And they examined his books, and they looked over his expenditures, and they made rules. They told him how much he's allowed to raise, how much he's allowed to take from each family, how the money is to be expended, and who's to oversee his books. And it was a real, it was really chutzpahdik. It was pashat mean. And he was let go. They let him go. And like I told you the story, Tes Kislev was Shabbos. It was late in the afternoon, Shabbos, the Rebbe was saying Chassidus, Ato Echad V'Shimcha Echad. They walked in to inform him of his freedom and didn't want to interrupt him. Believe me, they couldn't interrupt him anyway. He was in a different place. So by the time they finished the Maimon, it was already Matzah Shabbos, it was already Yud. So Yud Kislev became the Chag HaGeulah, but it was actually Tes Kislev that the Besura was prepared. Tes Kislev was yesterday, just like today. Shabbos was Yud Kislev, Sunday was Yud Kislev. And he went home, and on the way home again, there was a big party. But the Rebbe knew he wasn't free. The Rebbe knew that this was a pretense. It was a shtel. It was a mask. And they were making it impossible for him to function. And it really bothered him. I would say that in Das Tachten, it pushed it upset him. It depressed him. And the story goes that the Mittler Rebbe said, that the Gemara says, Chazal tell us, that Avraham Avinu was given two options, death or suffering. Death or exile. The Tata Genumen Golus. My father chose for himself exile. He was in jail. Upon him as familias geblieben the zweite Brede. Evidently, I was left with the second choice. At the time, it was a meaningless reference. But when he passed away, they understood exactly what he was saying. He left this world, Bepashtas. And at a certain point, he traveled to his father's tzion in Gaditch, to his father's grave, and he came out and he announced, "The Tate hat mir abgesagt von der Rabbanus," which means my father let me off the hook. I'm free. I don't have to be the Rav anymore. He was 53 years old. And it was assumed that this meant moving to Eretz Yisrael. No one ever dreamed about his talkus. And then he was traveling home. He stopped in the city of Nezhin. And he got sick. Now the Mittler Rebbe was born with bad lungs. He was born with respiratory trouble. He never had healthy lungs. How he spoke for 10 hours at a time, nobody knows. I mean, you can't talk for 10 hours at a time. The man had bad lungs from birth. And he would speak and speak and speak and speak like nothing ever happened. He was a very sick person. Mittler was sick all the time. So when he fell ill, the doctors examined him and said, "You can't speak. How have you been speaking until now?" It had no basis in seichel whatsoever. So they outlawed him from speaking. When they outlawed him from speaking, he simply had no reason to live. So he went into a coma. Mamish into a coma. Comatose. No reaction. And he laid in this coma for weeks. Until one doctor says to another doctor, "You want to see a miracle?" He goes over to the Rebbe and whispers in his ears that the doctors reconvened and they decided that it's okay, he can speak. So he sat up. He sat up and he said they should bring the Bigdei Lavan, his white Shabbazik HaKleidelach. He dressed the Bigdei Lavan, he sat down, he said Chassidus. And he fabrained with Chassidus for a week of Ochzeit. Now I figure he was weak, he probably spoke in a soft, hoarse voice. That's my imagination, I wasn't there. But imagine a man lays in a coma for weeks and you tell him he could speak and he pops up. I mean, it's completely not normal, completely supernatural. Until his birthday, Tes Kislev. The night of his birthday, he sat in Fabreng with Chassidim a whole night, told him to be besimcha. By his levaya, they were singing and crying. That's where the nigun comes from. The Rebbe said that they should dance and sing by his levaya, like by Rashbi. So they were singing and crying and dancing by his funeral. You notice, everybody knows the song. The Yiddishists sing that song. But this is where the song comes from the middle of Rebbe's Levaya. Anyway, he sat Chassidus a whole night. One Maimed, a second Maimed, a third Maimed. And at a certain point, he went into a very, very deep trance. The kind of trances he normally did in his room when nobody could see him. When you pay the Shamish a dollar, a ruble to check it out. And the Chassidim freaked out. They couldn't handle it. Because it didn't last for 5 minutes. It went on and on. Remember, a week before that Rebbe was laying without a Simen Chaim, he was laying in a coma, and now this? So after a while, they pushed it, became hysterical. And the whole room was screaming. And the Rebbe does not respond. They were shouting at the top of their lungs, saying, "Rebbe, we can't witness this. The Rebbe should not display these things in public. We can't watch it." And the Rebbe pushed it, was not here. And he sits up. So somebody says, "Rebbe, Did you hear? He says, yes, I heard. What is such a lofty soul doing in such a lowly world? This is what he heard. And he prepared himself to say chassidus. And he announced, he's going to reveal secrets of Torah that he has never revealed before. And he readied himself, that has never been revealed before. Nobody ever, he started to prepare himself. And evidently, it was very pushy. And they were literally on top of him. Again, this is why I imagine that it was very, very hard to hear him. They were mamish on top of him. And one of the chassidim's hats fell down and distracted his concentration. And the Rebbe took it as a sign that he shouldn't reveal. He says, I will not reveal what I was planning to reveal. He spoke a different maimed. And in the middle of that maimed, he quoted the pasuk Imcha Mekir Chayim, that with the Eibush had the source of all life, Mechaya Chayim, who gives life to all living things. And he stopped talking. Now, a whole night, he had been asking, is it morning yet? Oh, is it morning yet? The Rebbe knew that the time of his histalkos is exactly Aleis HaShachar, the morning. He kept, is it morning yet? And he stopped speaking. So they're waiting for him to continue to speak. And there were no more words. This was his histalkos. That's why he passed away. An incredible histalkos. The Tzemach Tzedek said, I figure he was there. He wrote in the introduction to the Teres Chaim, that this form of histalkos hasn't been since the time of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Rashbi. By Rashbi, the story is even more harrowing. It's even more powerful. By Rashbi, it says, I must go, so just finishing up. By Rashbi, it says that Rashbi had what was called an idre. An idre meant a place where he gathered together his Talmidim, where he revealed the deepest secrets of the Torah. The deepest secrets of the Torah. When Rashbi gathered together the Chavedim and the Idra, it's Pashas Nosei in Zayar, the light, the revelations, the godliness, so it says he had 10 Talmidim, and the Rechav, they have a Gosa Rechav, writes that these 10 students, including the Rashbi himself, were the 10 Sfiris, and the energies that were present at that occasion were so strong that three of them, Pashas, passed away. They passed away, Chalei Sanefesh, Tlas Tzavet, the Mesa Be'idre. So Rashbi calls together the remaining seven and says, let's do it again. I want to pass away. Could you imagine a notice like that? Come together to celebrate my ascent. And they got together. They joined him in the Idre. And Rashbi said Teira. And he spoke and he spoke and he spoke and he spoke and he spoke. And there's Neshama left. This is the story in Zohar, just like I tell it to you. Last year, like Bayman, I read the Zohar inside with you. The middle of the same histalkos. Incredible. It's mamish nishikin. This is a neshama. This has nothing to do with the body, nothing to do with biology, nothing to do with plumbing. This is pure neshama, pure alakus. Incredible stories. This is the story of the middle of Rebbe's histalkos. Ah? Like Aaron HaKain, like Miriam HaNevi, like Meshe Rabbeinu. And this is the reason why Yud Kislev, which is today, the Chag HaGul, the middle of Rebbe, never became the full-blown Yom Tov that Yud Kislev became. Because they were never finished with the government, never finished, and the Rebbe passed away in the interim, passed away. And the Tzemach Tzedek was Mamal Mekayim Mechayisne, he took over the Middle Rebbe. The Middle Rebbe's Hasidim had a very hard time transferring to the Tzemach Tzedek. And you'll pardon my grobkeit, because the Tzemach Tzedek was so normal. There was a morning, there was an afternoon, there was a night, there was a Shabbos, there was a weekday, there was Nigle, there was Chassidus, there was a life. By the Middle Rebbe, there was only Chassidus. And when the Hasidim used to complain to the Tzemach Tzedek, your Shver used to say, so much Hasidus, how come you're so cheap, so measured, so calculated? So the middle of that Tzemach Tzedek said like this, my Shver would walk through the Beis Medrash, the Hoidu Aleinu Shul in Lubavitch, and study through half the Shas. And when he walked back, he would study the other half of the Shas. Ich darf noch lernen Nigle, he said, I still have to engross myself in Limud HaNigle. Okay, then a good, then, you know, this is a good fabric.